listening to Pillow Talk Radio and Podcast.
Welcome back for another episode of Pillow Talk Radio and Podcast. This is your host, and this is episode Big Trouble, Little Tenderloin. And I am proud and excited to present to you a very special guest.
Special guest star.
One from my past that pervades my present. Joel Georgia.
What's going on, Paul? I'm good. Happy Friday. How are you?
Happy Friday to you, too. It is 7:30, Friday the 24th of August, and Joel Georgia is someone that I remember from a very pinnacle point in my life, a turning point, and the group that led me to him and the group surrounding him was one that altered my perception of friendship, humor, and at that point, manhood. So, without further ado, Joel, tell us the group dynamic that I walked into and the individuals involved. What was that group like?
Sure. It was you, me, the cool guy, Dave, the punk, and then Andrew, a.k.a. Terrence, a.k.a. Wolfman, the lowest of the low-key degenerate of the group. He was probably the most degenerate of the group.
Dude, it was. But it was also, like, on, like, a mental level, too. Like, do you remember? Like, I actually used to call him, I remember you guys calling him Wolfman, and I remember myself calling him Prince Terrence for some weird reason. But I would remember walking into his room and he'd be listening to this free jazz artist, Eric Dolphy, that I entered. I don't know if you remember that, but we just walk into his room and he'd be listening to this weird ass free jazz high out of his mind. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And I don't know how he got high because he smoked like the smallest bowls ever.
he smoked snappers.
Yeah. He rarely, like, he wouldn't. If we were like in a group smoking weed and like packing bowls and it was his turn, he would like put a little snap in and be like, here you go. And you'd be like, what the fuck? And you'd be like, dude, that's plenty. And no, he was a weird kid. He was from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Only child. But man, he liked drugs.
Yeah. Like how did you meet him? I'm pretty sure you met Dave first, right? I mean, Dave was the first one that you met out of all.
No, so it was Wolfman. I'm just going to call him Wolfman throughout the show.
Yes, please.
I met him at like freshman orientation. And I kind of seen him around the dorm because we lived on the same floor. But at orientation, we were standing around, I think waiting for a bus or something, and I bummed a cigarette from him, which I was really surprised that he gave me one now in hindsight, because he would never give anyone anything. and I asked for a cigarette. He said, yeah, here you go. And I was pretty much like, cool, see you later. And then like that night or the next night or whatever, we played like some dumb RA dorm game where you had to like learn someone's name. I already knew his name. And then, I don't know. I guess Dave came. Dave was supposed to be my roommate. He knocked on my door at like 3 o'clock in the morning, with an RA and they're like, your roommate's here. And I was like, there's already a dude sleeping on the top bunk. And then, but like Dave kind of already looked like someone I would hang out with. So I started hanging out with Dave afterwards, just smoking cigarettes with him outside. And then Wolfman kind of just fell into our group. I think Dave kind of made friends with him first because Dave's way more outgoing than I am. And just made friends with Wolfman in the cafeteria. And then we all were skateboarding at the time too. So we would just go out at night and skateboard. And that's kind of how we all started hanging out.
And so on the topic of Wolfman, I remember there was a time you explained to me that he actually, and for the listeners, you would never expect this if you saw this kind of guy. I mean, he was a very interesting fellow. But Joel, do you remember when you talked to me about how he got arrested?
Yeah.
Can you go on about that?
Yeah, sure. So he really wanted to go down to the Hate to buy some acid. He really wanted acid one day.
Yep.
And he likes getting ripped off, so he decided to go to the Hate for that. I don't know why the fuck you'd go to the Hate. He really liked going down there to buy drugs, I think because it was, like, easy. He didn't really have someone to sell him drugs in the dorm. So he went down to the Hate. I went with him because it was, like, Saturday. I had nothing else to do. He didn't score anything. It was basically a bust. I think we went to Amoeba. I bought a CD or something. And then we drove back, and people that don't know, when you're going from the Civic Center in San Francisco up to Nob Hill, where our fancy dorm room was, is you go up, I want to say it's Jones or Leavenworth. I don't know. It's been a while. And you go up a place called Pill Hill because there is you're going uphill and there's like a methadone clinic right there. And so there's just a bunch of crackheads hanging out selling the drugs they just got. And Wolfman was like, you know, I didn't get anything here. I'm going to get, I don't know, Klonopin, something like that. He just wanted to buy some pills. And I was like, all right, that's cool. You know, you buy your pills. I'm just going to keep walking. I'll wait for you like a block up because, you know, I didn't want to be around that. because, you know, I just kind of walked up the hill and just watched him. He buys his drugs and he starts walking back up the block towards me, and about halfway up, you see cops just like slowly following him. oh, and I'm just like, okay, so they saw that. And then he walks up to me and the, you know, kid from the Upper Peninsula in Michigan comes out. And he's like, dude, look what I got. Like super excited and like showing me his pills, which like I didn't give a fuck about. And I was like, dude, you should put those away. And so I just, he's not paying attention and I'm still kind of watching the cops. And we're starting to walk up the hill. Out of the corner of my eye, I see cops jump out of the car. I'm like, oh, here we go. And they just like, he was wearing a backpack, and this like kind of short and stout bald cop grabbed him by the backpack, and Wolfman is, you know, he's pretty tall. He's probably like 5'11", but a string bean. And he just like pulled him back, just gave him like whiplash. And he was just kind of like, what the fuck? I think he thought he was getting jumped, by a crackhead or something, and they threw him up against the wall and they just told me to sit down, and they were just asking him like what he bought and where it was and stuff like that. And they told me while they were still questioning him, like, you can leave. So I got up and left. They didn't even search me or anything because, you know me, I'm a Boy Scout, right? And he just got thrown in a cop car and taken away. And then I went back to the dorm and told everyone, and no one believed me until he was gone for like 2 days. And then he showed back up like Sunday night, I think.
Oh, my God. Told everyone the story. So, and this, at that point, boy from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, for these people listening, like, you, like, he is not the person that you would imagine in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. Like, it's just, and to be in jail for solicitation of drug, for drugs, it's, it was a trip to hear about.
And his parents found out because while he was in jail, he wanted to watch TV. But to watch TV, he needed a reference for, like, good behavior. So, smart guy he is, he wrote down his dad's name. And they called his dad and was like, your kid's in jail. And, I don't know, he wants to watch TV.
And is that the first time they heard from him?
That was
while he was in jail?
Yeah, that's how he found out. He was, like, trying to keep it from him. But for some reason, he wrote down his dad as a reference.
Whoa. So, that's definitely a tale that I remember hearing about. I think he also told me one time that this guy tried to rob him at the Muni on Market or something like that. But Wolfman's definitely had some misadventures, especially in his pursuit of Sid in Golden Gate Park. So now that we've talked about Wolfman, let's talk about one Mr. Dave Sprague. And I remember specifically always heading into his dorm room at the dorms. And can you describe his bathroom at that point?
It was just, from what I can remember, it was just full of just clippings that he found. I think some were pornographic. He never cleaned it. I don't think, like, that entire semester he had cleaned it. And I don't know, it was just a filthy bathroom, like something out of Train Spotting or something.
I think it was probably worse than that, to be honest.
And it was just nasty, and, like, shows you how smart I was, like, saw that bathroom and I was like, oh yeah, he'd be a good person to get an apartment with.
Well, at that point, you know, we were all thinking very conceptually about our lives. You know, we were all very artistic. And of course, like, conceptually, it'd be cool to kick it with someone that liked to keep a filthy bathroom out of aesthetics only.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the back of, was it, like, underneath, like, the top seat of the toilet was all gay porn. It was all gay porn.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have a picture of it. It's probably, like, in an old photo bucket or something.
Right. I think I might have one, too. But Dave himself is another individual that also redefined the way I look at humor. Like, you guys were so fucking funny, dude. Like, it was, Joel, I remember you for having, like, this very dry and very, like, hyper satirical sense of humor. And it's, you know, it also leads into some insights too, you know. It's really funny. And then with Dave, he almost has, like, this Looney Tunes cartoonical, if I can make that word up for a second, sense of humor. I don't know. You guys just, like, together, just a really funny duo. And that's what I remember you guys for like, the most back then.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Laurel and Hardy type relationship. Yeah.
So, do you have any experiences from the Tenderloin? Because after I left, you guys still kicked it there for a while. And eventually, you guys got your own apartment. Off there, was it off Eddy?
Ellis.
It was on Ellis.
Taylor, I think. Ellis and Leavenworth. 516. 516 Ellis.
Fuck, I can't believe I almost remember the exact address. So 516 Ellis.
Above Do you have Migos any experience? Market.
Above the Migos Market. And actually, not too many blocks away from several instances where I've gotten gypped for drugs.
Well, yeah. So what happens down there?
Yep. Do you have any experiences you'd like to share?
I don't know. Like, once we got our own apartment was kind of when we started really causing trouble. I mean, Dave and I went to a lot of metal shows around the Bay. And we kind of had a game, I guess a habit of stealing Mercedes emblems.
I remember that. Yeah. That started before I left the school.
Yeah, it's been on. That went on for a few years. Pretty much every Mercedes that we saw while we were out at night, we snatched it. And we just, I remember one time we got out of a show and Dave was just like walking on top of cars that were parked in the street. And he started like just jumping on the hoods and then sliding down the windshield.
Was he drunk?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there was probably a night we lived there that we weren't drunk. He the last one that he did, obviously it was the last one because he jumped on the windshield and just smashed the windshield, and so we just booked it and just walked home. And then we stopped at Amigos Market below us. And
where was that though?
Where did he jump on the car?
Yeah, what part of town?
That it was like in between the Mission and Civic Center. Like I think we were walking, okay. We were probably walking up like Van Ness or Mission Street. We were in the market after he had done that, and I looked down and I just see like blood coming out from the bottom of his pants. And I was like, I think you're bleeding. And then turns out his ass was bleeding. He got some glass in his ass from jumping on the windshield. Dave and I we caused, I don't know, we were just kind of degenerates. We were in our 20s. We partied a lot. Did things that maybe I regret a little bit now, like kind of feel bad for stealing Mercedes emblems, but I don't know, I was kind of an asshole back then.
I'm not trying to excuse what you did because of course that is against the law, but at the same time, if you have a Mercedes, you should probably be able to afford to replace that symbol.
I suppose. I mean, then again, we weren't like always stealing them off the nice ones, like, you know, those old like 80s diesel.
The diesel, yeah.
Yeah.
They're probably hurting after that.
Yeah, they're probably, yeah. God damn it. So, we just smoked a lot of weed, grew weed, listened to a lot of metal, went to a lot of metal shows, and I don't know, just drank way too much.
One of the last times I was there, that's definitely a while ago. One of the times that I was there with you and him must have been 2009 before he moved across the country.
Yeah.
And I remember that he was about to take me to a noise show. I know you guys were just into heavy music in general back then. Mm-hmm. But aside from like what you listened to for music, what else do you remember experiencing back then?
Let's see. I remember, I don't know, just kind of hating school, hating work, kind of getting tired of living with Dave because I think I can't remember. I mean, he's, you know, I'd say my best friend, but living with him got a little tiring. He, you know, not once bought toilet paper the entire time we lived together. So, one time I was just like, well, let's see what happens if I just take all the toilet paper out of the bathroom. And, you know, maybe he'll go buy some. But no, he just started rinsing his ass in the shower.
You're kidding me.
No.
Wait, no, you're joking.
No. Because, like, the first time, I was like, let's see what happens. And he goes in, takes a shit. I was like, oh, here we go. I just hear the shower running. Shower ran for, like, 15 seconds. And he came back out. And I was like, I'm done. So, he won that battle.
Damn it, dude. It's so funny. Like, seeing you guys, because while you guys lived there, I don't know if you remember, but like since I left, I had made a point to return pretty much every fall since that to visit you guys. Mm-hmm. And like, it's funny because at one point you guys just like became like non-tenderloin Joel and Dave. Like, there was at one point, I mean, like, up until that point, you guys were, like, still listening to fucking insane grind or black metal or noise or all this insane shit, and we were all doing ketamine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then one time I went back, and I'm pretty sure it was around 2012, 2013, and it's just like, I went to your spot. You're like, well, I have to go to work. this is what I'm going to do, you know, and this is my plan. And I was like, oh, shit, like, you know, this is... not long after Dave got married, and he told me it was like the first, when you were at Dave's wedding, it was the first time you seen him without cutoffs.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see that transition.
Yeah. So yeah, the last time you came, I was living by myself, right?
Yep.
And I think, I don't know, at that point, I was kind of a really big loner because Dave had just moved, and he had kind of moved suddenly, and I basically had like 2 weeks to find an apartment, and it was kind of at the time I was dating one girl, but I was still like really caught on with my ex. And then when Dave had moved, like my ex had kind of come back into the picture. And this girl who I was dating for, we'll just call her Phoebe because that's her name. she was a really nice girl. And everything, but I just kind of wasn't that into her. And instead of, you know, when I was in between places staying with her, I decided to stay with my ex and stayed with her for 2 weeks and cheated on my girlfriend with her while finding my new apartment. And then eventually I broke up with that girl, quit talking to my ex. But then once I moved into this studio apartment, and kind of my best friend was gone, I just kind of quit hanging out with everyone. I just was kind of just going to work and drinking a lot. Like I would buy a handle of Jim Beam twice a week and just, you know, drink probably two handles of Jim Beam a week on top of beers and stuff. So just kind of drinking every day. I'm just a functioning alcoholic.
But you know what? I feel, of course, like not everyone does this, but I noticed this trait or this kind of behavior in a lot of guys who are just out on their own, especially in their 20s. Like I've had several friends like this. And of course, like, I mean, birds of a feather, but I mean, in my experience, it seems like a lot of guys that aren't tied down to anything, they tend to be kind of like wild dogs. And that could be a good or a bad thing. But that's just my own perception of it.
Yeah. And that was kind of Tinder. I found Tinder then, which I'm not sure when that came out, but it felt pretty early on.
I think I didn't convince you to get on that.
You might have.
I remember the day specifically. I remember like I was there and I hopped on Tinder. I was like, oh shit, like it's pretty easy up here, Joel. Hey, do you want to meet up with this one girl I matched with on Tinder? And you were like, I don't know, Paul. I don't know. Yeah. And then a week later, after I'd gotten back, you said that you were on Tinder and you met this girl that happened to be a designer, which I remember you told me at that point you couldn't like escape the grasp of designer females. You had like a propensity to track these types. And so you're just like, Paul, if this doesn't go well, you know, like it's going to be your fault.
Yeah. I mean, I never dated anyone from Tinder. I definitely slept with people from Tinder. Mm-hmm.
It's the way it works.
Yeah. And kind of eventually I got tired of that life and moved back to Colorado.
Right. And so how do you like Colorado by comparison?
You know, when I first moved to California, I really wanted to get away from Colorado because, you know, it's where I was born. And I guess back then it was probably starting to get cool, but at the time I didn't think it was a really cool place. But, you know, living in California made me appreciate not living in California.
Right.
If that makes sense.
I know it does.
But, yeah, I, you know, really like living here. Weather's nice. You got mountains and, you know, it's getting a lot bigger now. A lot of people moving here. It's a pretty nice place to live.
And so while we move on to the topic of Colorado and your life now, do you have anything to say as far as your experiences about California and living in the Tenderloin?
I mean, it was a good learning experience. It kind of, you know, taught me how to keep my head on a swivel and, you know, always be aware of your surroundings. Met a lot of good people there. Some friends that, I mean, I still talk to, you know, you, Dave, and Wolfman.
You still talk to Wolfman, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Dave told me he hadn't talked to him in a while.
Yeah, I don't talk to him on the phone. I just talk to him on Facebook. It's like, he's on Facebook at like 3 a.m.
Jesus, that does not surprise me.
Yeah. But yeah, he's up in Oregon, working for Ryder. Yeah, he's working for Ryder, that truck company.
What's he doing there?
I think he's just like a truck jockey, like just like renting trucks out to people.
No shit. Well, that's cool. I mean, that seems like a place he'd want to be, like, you know, Oregon. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of his vibe.
So, we're going to take a break and listen to Dimini right now, a track that I made a few months ago. I'm Okay, and we're back. That was Dimini. And so, Joel, even though the conversation has moved towards where you are now and the state of Colorado, far from the Tenderloin, we can't escape the fact that degeneracy, is now a part of us by whatever it means. It has permeated our soul. What does degeneracy mean to you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think it's kind of just a way to, I guess, you're always hurting someone with degeneracy, whether it's someone else or yourself. In, you know, whatever small way that is, or big. But to me, it's just kind of, it could be anything from, you know, turning up the radio, like when your wife is talking too much in the car. or, you know, like something worse, like, I don't know, stealing. Although I haven't done that since college. I can buy my beer now.
I remember you told me that you went through a phase where you would go to bars and then you would unscrew the light bulbs and throw them in the trash can near the door on the way out when you walked out. Is this true?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of a drunk thing. Like, it would always be, you know, after I was really drunk and like kind of taking that last piss of the night before you leave the bar, you know, and I would just take the light bulb out of the bathroom. So the bathroom would be completely dark for the rest of the night. And just leave.
And of course the entertainment, the entertainment factor is obviously there by listening to it, but what is the purpose? What joy did you get from it?
Sometimes just like walking out and telling the next guy that the lights weren't working, and just knowing that he knew why they weren't working. And I don't know, just other time, I think most of the times I did it just out of frustration of, you know, probably not liking the bar I was at, not liking the people at the bar.
Yes, this is a what? Go ahead.
At that point in my life, I really didn't like people because, you know, just a moody 20-year-old.
This is a wonderfully degenerate. And so, going off that, how do you think we can best and most safely utilize degeneracy to lead a fulfilling life?
You know, I think it can just fulfill you by giving you those small amounts of satisfaction. Like kind of like the most recent example that I can think of is, I live in a neighborhood like in the suburbs now. Everyone's got at least a 2-car garage and a driveway. But for whatever reason, my neighbor decides to park his truck in front of my house every night. And it's really, like, when you think about it, not that big of a fucking deal. Like, he's just parking his truck there. But you're like, there's no one parking in your garage. Well, because your garage is full of shit. But there's there's definitely no one parking in your driveway. Like, your driveway's empty. So, you know, just kind of staring out my front window, like day after day, just seeing his truck, and he doesn't move it for like days. Like, he probably drives his truck like twice a week. And it just kind of just starts to wear on you. You're like, God damn it, this fucking truck again, like just always sitting out there, blocking my view of like nothing. The neighbor across the street, like who gives a shit? Like, who?
It's just obstruction, right?
Yeah,
it's obstruction.
It's just like, I don't know, it's just something that just drives me nuts. So, I mean, if you take a little rock and you unscrew a tire valve and you put the rock in the cap of the tire valve and then screw it back on, and it'll slowly deflate a tire. Like, it usually takes a couple hours, maybe. So I've done that to him like twice now. And it's not doing anything because he's still parking in front of my house, but it just kind of gives me that little bit of satisfaction knowing that he has to like pull his air compressor out and fill it up at like, you know, 6 a.m. when he drives it twice a week.
Well, that's his fault. I mean, technically that's city property, but like, I mean, like, you don't move into a place just to see someone else's truck in front of your driveway.
Right. And I can see that. And I've, you know, like, I looked up the law because I'm an adult now, and like, these dumb adult things piss me off. Like, I sound like someone's dad, like, goddamn truck parked in front of my house. But yeah, it's like, he lives two doors down, and the law's like, you can't park in front of someone's house that's not adjacent to yours for more than 3 hours.
Really? That's a law?
That's a law. So in my city.
Wow, that's a dope law.
Yeah, so I feel justified, you know, flattening his tire, so.
Good. I think you should do that more, to be honest. And I like this whole Hank Hill vibe you're going on. And so considering the vibe that you're on right now, what I want to know is, so we know about the degenerate of the past 10 years, and we know about the present degenerate, but like, what are your degenerative perspectives in the future? How does that look? How do you think degeneracy in a mild and healthy way will unfurl into your life, and what do you plan on doing with that in the future?
Probably passing it on to my son.
Wonderful. And how would you do that? What would
you say? I don't know. Probably unintentionally. probably him seeing me do bad things.
Right.
Or, you know, teaching him how to do things, like, you know, use a slingshot and shit and just letting him go hog wild and letting him break windows and stuff.
See, I like that because the thing is, that's relatively harmless. You know, obviously, if he's not necessarily a quote-unquote fire starter, mm-hmm. and I don't think that's in your genetics to be a sociopath. I mean, you're not a sociopath yourself, obviously. But what I imagine is, it's always good to have a little bit of grime to you because, first off, chicks dig it. Secondly, mm-hmm. I mean, it'll help you out of situations. And thirdly, it will help you get comeuppance, like what you just described with your neighbor. And so as long as within a healthy, like healthy range and healthy limit, because even though you said that you had functional alcoholism at one point, I never really viewed you or perceived you as an alcoholic. I mean, yeah, again,
I think that's because a lot of alcoholics are good at hiding it.
So would you say that you probably were?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was going to work drunk pretty much every day. So I would, you know, drink enough to get drunk and then go to work and kind of like sober up during like work.
That always makes me sleepy. Did it ever make you sleepy?
Well, I worked at a coffee shop, so I just drank a shitload of coffee.
You never felt miserable?
No. And then I would just go back home and drink. I think when you drink that much, you just kind of get used to like the ups and downs.
Right.
Okay. And it was only like, you know, 5 to 8 hours at a time where, I mean, I would get drunk enough to where like probably 3/4 of the way through my shift, I would start to sober out.
So like the shifts were 8 hours?
Usually. I mean, it was, you could work like a 5-hour shift sometimes a 6-hour shift, but usually like 5 to 8 hours.
Okay. Well, five is not too bad.
Yeah, and I would bike to work too, from the Tenderloin up to the marina by the Golden Gate Bridge. Just drunk.
To work?
Yeah.
That reminds me of sometimes when I was in. See, the thing is, like, Copenhagen. When I lived in Copenhagen, it's like, it's a hyper degenerate. I mean, not hyper degenerate, but it's a pretty. It's like a stably, like, the baseline for Copenhagen. That city is fairly degenerate. Not too. It never gets too degenerate, and it never is like not that degenerate. It's more like everyone. It's like drinking culture, basically, right? And I remember when I would bike, because everyone bikes over there, and I had a stolen. I've had several stolen bikes there, which is also like somewhat weirdly legal, which I think is also like part of the baseline degeneracy that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Is that I would go and I would party like everyone else, and at the end of the night, I would insist on either walking in the ice home or just riding my bike. And one time I was with my friend Pedro, and we were getting fucking wasted. And then on the way home, or actually before I left, he convinced me to take some hash with him. So we smoked some hash, and I got on my bike, and it felt like I was walking on a tightrope. Like... riding your bike while drunk or heavily, heavily inebriated is pretty much an experience in itself.
Yeah, I've gotten in a lot of crashes on my bike while drunk. Oh, yeah. And one time it was, I think, coming home from a bar, and it was just raining, and I wiped out pretty bad.
Oh my God.
And then another two times was on the way to work, which was kind of cool because I got out of work for it. One, I hit a pothole and went over the handlebars, and just like tore open my chin, had to go and get stitches. And then another one was I was going down a hill, and a lady in the middle of the street made a U-turn, like not even at an intersection, just decided to make a U-turn. And I flipped over the hood of her car and broke my wrist, and she just drove away.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I mean, both times.
She just drove away?
Yeah. It was really funny because I remember, like, I flipped over the hood of her car, and the passenger, like, I was like laying right next to the car on the other side, on the passenger side, and the passenger rolled down the window, and she was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so," just because, you know, you're just out of it. And she's like leaned back in the car, and you're like, "Yeah, he's okay," and then they just drove away. So, but both times probably could have been avoided if I was sober. Probably would have had a quicker reaction time.
Right. Jesus Christ. both those times, did you have to get an ambulance?
No ambulance. Both times I just kept riding my bike to work. Yeah, and like, cause like when you work, so you know, I worked at Starbucks, which is, you know, a pretty corporate place, and if you just call in and you're like, "Oh, you know, I broke my wrist or I cut my chin open," they're just like, "Yeah, whatever," and probably, you know, fire you in the next 2 days for not showing up. So both times, like, I walked into the back room when my chin was busted, and I was like, "I need to go to the hospital." And they're like, "Why?" And I just took my hand off my chin, and just blood was squirting out. And they're like, "Oh God." And then the second time I just went in with like a dangly broken wrist, and I was like, "I need to go to the hospital." And they're like, "Okay."
These sound like Beavis and Butt episodes.
It's pretty much what it was like. And, no ambulance, just took the Uber or Lyft. Lyft was really big back then. I don't think Uber was around.
Yeah, I think I remember the time. Wow. It's interesting because this is, like, what I always talk about. Like, obviously, when we're in our 20s, like, Like, I have had plenty of situations similar to that, but luckily no broken bones or a bunch of gushing blood. But I do say that this is the reason why men go through their 20s. So they understand the levels of degeneracy that they can actually be functioning with. So, for example, riding your bike to work drunk was probably at that point fun because it was new, but after a few times you realize, like, well, maybe I shouldn't do this that drunk.
No, I definitely did not learn that lesson.
But there's also levels to it. Like, for example, right now, I may not be skydiving drunk or doing some other asinine shit, but I am drinking an Old English right now. And from what I understand, you are also drinking some beers yourself.
Yep.
And what are you drinking?
Drinking Extra Gold Lager by Coors. Mm. Gotta support those local Colorado craft breweries.
So when it's closer to the breweries in Colorado, is it like the same thing with Guinness? Like if it's closer to the brewery in Ireland, is it better?
I don't think so. I mean, I buy it because it's like 5% and $15 for 30 of them.
Damn, that's not bad.
Yeah. So you can drink like 6 and go to bed.
And so for the listeners, I've watched Joel. God, I'm already drunk. I've watched Joel learn the art of brewing over the past few years over Instagram on top of many very sexy pizza pics. And and it seems like, dude, like you're like, you, at one point you were just like showing off like, you know, your new hobby, but it seems like you have like shit in the background now. And like, you know, your sister made those glasses for you, those pint glasses that look fucking legit as shit. So, I mean,
oh, yeah, that's my sister-in-law.
Yeah, your sister-in-law. So when are you going to bust out with, was it Georgia Brewing?
Never.
Never.
It's just it's too oversaturated here. I mean,
right.
Well, everyone and their cousins got a brewery, and, you know, it's like that in California too.
Yeah, it's either here, New York. Well, I mean, here, Colorado, New York, or like New England, it seems like.
Yeah. Pacific Northwest is pretty big too.
I don't think it's as big as the other ones though. Like, I mean, like, I feel like Colorado, California, and maybe New York or like New England, but I mean, sure, there's definitely a scene up there, but it doesn't seem like nearly as like the other ones.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of just started brewing beer just to save money, which is kind of a dumb way to go into any hobby because you just
keep lots of shit into it.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's a fun, relaxing hobby, and you know, if you do it right, you can, you know, make a beer for 20 cents. So,
but I mean, you said that you've done some really good beers, though, right? I mean, from what you've tried.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely on the level with what you would buy at a bar when you're buying like a craft beer, because, you know, recipes are pretty readily available, and I've gotten so into it that it's basically making a small version of what people are doing in a craft brewery,
right?
Just in my backyard. And you know, I've got a 4-tap kegerator downstairs, and yet here I am drinking Coors. So,
but you know, I was on Reddit today and I was looking at our pizza, and it reminded me of like the pizza pics that you'd show me. Mm-hmm. You don't have a pizza oven though, right? You just have like a regular oven.
Yeah, just a regular oven. I do have a pizza stone though, which really helps.
See, like those pizza pics are fucking delicious looking, dude. I need to come out there and visit, and I don't know, like, we need to take some brownies, or like, we need to make like a weed pizza or something, because I'm back on the leaf. I'm back on the flower for the time being. But it's actually mostly a pen. I've been smoking pens.
Yeah. You know, I don't know when it became legal here, but when it did, my now wife and I went out and bought weed, and it was just kind of like, oh, cool, we can buy weed now. And now I don't know if I'm just getting older, but I have like a half ounce of weed that's been sitting in my bedside drawer for well over a year. And just don't touch it. Just don't have, and just don't, like, I kind of thought about having some tonight, but I was just like, I'll probably fall asleep. But it was kind of like you. I started vaping.
Yeah. I just feel like, because I get really, I mean, I make myself busy a lot, and I'm pretty sure you're the same way because you have a ton of hobbies and, you know, you work all the time. But, like, it seems like that's better than, because do you remember, like, hitting bongs and you'd be stoned for, like, 3 hours, like, heavily stoned?
Yeah. Like, when I lived with Dave, we smoked a lot of bongs and probably went... Probably went through like 6 bongs because I would have one for like 2 weeks and then Dave would break it and then I'd have to go buy a new one. And like he lost and broke so many of my pieces and never offered or bought me a new one. And and one time he had this kid over and they were smoking weed out of my bong and they broke it and Dave put it in my closet and put like clothes on top of it, thinking thinking that I would just find it and be like, oh no, my dirty clothes broke the bong. And like to this day he still won't admit that he did it. So
that is such a drunk logic. That is drunk logic to a T. Maybe if I put these clothes on it, it'll appear like it broke itself.
But yeah, the last time I actually smoked weed was now over a year ago, when Dave was out here for my wedding. It was the last time we smoked weed. And we bought like a joint from a dispensary, smoked half of it, and we were like, oh dear. And we fell asleep. And because like neither of us really smoke weed anymore. Him, I think mostly because he lives in the South.
So he can't get it?
Yeah. He actually bought a bunch of like weed and edibles and for his mom and mailed it back for her while he was here, which is kind of funny.
So when you smoke weed, what do you prefer, indica or sativa?
We were a indica household, because sativa will like give my wife some pretty bad paranoia and anxiety. So
really,
yeah, indica's calmer down.
What about for you?
I don't know. I could kind of go either way. I kind of really don't.
So you're probably a hybrid guy.
I mean, I don't really have a preference. I guess if I was like trying to function, like, you know, during the day, I'd probably do a sativa, but in the nighttime, do an indica. I don't know. I'm really kind of, I'm the type of person that's like beer is beer, weed is weed, kind of. I mean, clearly right. There's limits, but you know,
someone, I used to be like that. Go ahead.
If someone's passing a joint, I'm not going to be like, is this sativa or indica? Oh, no, sorry, I only smoke indica.
See, I'm actually that guy because the thing is, like, indica
damn it.
Makes me really anxious.
Really?
But sativa, like, does... No, it makes sense. It would make sense to be for it to be the opposite like that. You're right. Because, like, indica is, like, supposed to be body high, like, mellows you out, chills you the fuck out. But for me, it's like, oh, shit, I'm not doing anything. Anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. But with a sativa, it's like, oh, shit, like, the world is full of, like, glee and wonder again or some fairy shit. hybrids are also pretty cool, too. I'm actually on, like, a hybrid, I don't know, little vial, little capsule, little fucking concentrate for my pen right now. And it's a sativa dominant hybrid. It's really good. But as far as what you're saying with the beer is beer thing, I actually agree with that, because there was a point, I remember the first time you and Dave took me to Tornado, which was off Hate, right?
Yeah.
I think it's still on Hate. Yeah, it was actually a really dope experience, like a ton of great beers. But like at this point, if I went back, I wouldn't be going for those double or triple IPAs, you know, like those things that just got shipped in that has like, you know, gnats swirling around it. It's like really room temperature because it's so fresh. It's, for me, it's just more like, okay, what's something that's drinkable, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want my shit overwhelmed. And my friend who's also, my other friend who's also the other one that I considered a street owl, Howie, he refers to a lot of really intense craft beers as tasting like spicy dirt, which I think is a very apt analogy.
But yeah, I can drink any beer. I mean, even warm beer.
Okay, so if, for example, if you were to be ejected from this earth on some sort of experiment for the next 6 months to a year, and you weren't given the option for any premium beer, and you had to get really like low level beer, I'm talking like malt liquor and shit that you get for like 99 cents to $2 a tall can, what are the 1, 2, 3 beers you would take with you?
So being watched in the space and I have to drink malt liquor, are we limiting it to malt liquor or just cheap beer?
Cheap beer or malt liquor. And like, it has to be like Bud Ice or less.
But I like, in terms of price or alcohol?
Price.
Okay. So I'd probably do Coors. Mm-hmm. For like a heavier beer, I'd probably do St. Ides.
Mm.
And then like something to spice it up, maybe like a Budweiser Chelada or something.
That was a surprise, yeah. Okay, so we have this
variety.
I didn't know this is going to happen, but it's unfurling as we speak. So we have your beer list, and you just named it. Okay. So you're obviously going to be, you're going to be bored shitless up in space. Like, there's no direct TV, as far as we know at this point. So what three drugs will you take with you? I mean, provided that there aren't any repercussions per se, as far as like, okay, well, I mean, if you don't, say you like bring 100 grams of cocaine with you.
Sure.
You're not immediately going to go into cardiac arrest, but the possibility is still there if you act dumb. So with that being said, what three drugs will you take if there's less of an opportunity for you to have a fatal reaction?
I would go with marijuana.
Okay.
Advil for the St. Ides. And ketamine, because that'd probably be cool to be in a K-hole and float in space.
A K-hole next to a black hole?
Yeah, boy.
This one dude that you guys introduced me to from Malibu.
Cameron.
He's the one who... Yes, Cameron. Yeah. I actually didn't really like that guy, to be honest.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, it seemed like none of you guys like really liked him, but yeah. he gave me ketamine, and that was cool.
So this kid was, excuse me, like very well off. Well, his parents were very well off, and we kind of. Dave and I, when I say we, hung out with him because he bought a lot of weed and bought a lot of ketamine, and you know, he liked to party, so he's kind of just like tolerable. Dave definitely tolerated him more and was more like easygoing, but I kind of didn't really like his bullshit. And kind of like the last 6 months that Dave was living there, I got fed up with the kid, and just quit talking to him. And Dave would just bring him over and like hang out with him in his room, and I just wouldn't talk to him. And here's a degenerate story: was this kid, when we lived in the Tenderloin, lived about four blocks north up in Knob Hill. He had a studio apartment, and for some dumbass reason, he gave us a key to his apartment in case he ever lost his or whatever. And one weekend, he said he was going home for the weekend, and we knew where his weed was. And Dave was like, oh, we should go take his weed. And I was like, okay. So I think Dave was a lookout or something outside. He didn't go inside the apartment with me, but this kid had a bed that it was like a loft bed. He had a really tiny studio apartment, like the size of like a bedroom. So he had a loft bed that was like close to the ceiling. If you walked in, you couldn't see if anyone was up there. And so I walked in, was rifling through his shit and stealing his weed. And I just heard like some rustling up in the loft bed. And I was like, oh shit, he lied to us about being gone. And he was just kind of like, huh, what? Like kind of waking up. And I just grabbed his weed and walked out. And he never said anything, never figured it out. He might have assumed that it was us, but he never said anything.
Oh my God. Well, yeah, because like the thing is, if he assumed and confronted you guys about it, he'd be outing himself too.
Yeah, but it was a weird relationship because we just tolerated him because he paid for our friendship, basically.
That's how those cats do.
Yeah.
And I remember that kind of dynamic.
Yeah, one time he invited me down to his place or his parents' house in Malibu. And I was just like, sure, like, you know, I'm down. Like, you're paying for it. I'll go down there with you. So we took a bus down there, Greyhound, and spent the weekend there. He had a pretty nice house. He didn't really, I don't think it was Malibu. I'm sure people around you know. It's like some canyon around Agoura Hills, I think.
Oh, okay.
So he lived in some yuppie canyon, and his parents had a pretty nice house, but not nice enough to where like I could see where all of his bragging was coming from. And I was like,
right.
I was like, shit, it's not that nice. But you know, they had a pool and stuff, and you know, his dad gave me, I made so much money that weekend doing nothing. His dad gave me $200 to just spend. And I just,
wait, what?
Yeah. His dad was like, he was like, oh yeah, you guys go have fun. And he gave me $200 for no reason. He had like just met me. I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, and I like bought probably like a couple cases of beer with that.
What did you guys do with that money?
What did I do? I bought a couple cases of beer and put the rest in my pocket and like used it to pay rent. And then he was just like, I don't know what he did with it. And then there was some party going on. One of his friends was having a party, so they asked me. And it was at like another really big house. If I would, you know, stand outside and take money, I think they're charging like $5 a person. and I was like, yeah, no problem. Like, I don't know why you would ask like some fucking random stranger to do that for
because
you.
Because he pocketed some of the money.
Oh, yeah. Probably every other person I pocketed $5. You have the left pocket for the money you'll give the host. The right pocket's for me. And then eventually, the cops showed up. So, I just kind of gave the host, a wad of cash. And I was like, here you go. I got to go bite. And probably got, another, $150, $200 out of that, too. So,
oh, my fucking God. That was a cash cow.
Yeah, and then I met a girl there at that party. And I took her back to this kid's parents' house, Cameron's parents' house, and I got a blowjob. So all in all, pretty good weekend.
But wait, so how did you guys all go back to his house, or did Cameron stay there?
No, he brought a girl home because these two girls were friends.
Oh, okay. So it was a little double thing.
Yeah. And that girl, actually, she came to visit me in San Francisco, too. So I kind of messed around for a while. She's a pretty cool chick.
That's cool.
I'm still friends with her on Instagram.
Nice. Fuck. What a wonderful tale of degeneracy that you led us through. Joel, I really hope you enjoyed your time here on this podcast, sharing your experiences with us. Would you be willing to come back again sometime?
Yeah, the pay's pretty good, so I'll be back.
Shh, don't tell them about the pay. They're going to get ideas. But with that, this is the end of our show. Come back next week for episode The Golden Kliss, which will be essentially a debauched podcast of our friend Chris Garcia from Let's Drive to Alaska, Golden Tongues, and his entry into his 31st year of life, and many tales from his youth being a complete degenerate and continuing so as an alpha degenerate. And with that, goodbye.